Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is an International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We come to you live over the internet from all over the world, from Blog Talk Radio. This is the International Black Summit, and our website is www.blacksummit.org. I've got some great conversation today. We're going to have Cynthia, Ia, and Sheila talking about organic gardens, and we're actually going to be a two-part series, so we're going to have so the ladies come back for next week, and we're going to continue the conversation. But we'll get started like we normally do by the declaration. So, Jill, would you lead us in the declaration?
Yes. The declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Atlanta, Georgia, September 18th, 2011. North, south, east, west. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. Back to you, Glenn.
Thanks, Jill. That was great. So we start off with the declaration, and what we're going to do is let you know the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. So it's an opportunity for us to engage you, to look at what's possible. And tonight we're actually going to be looking at providing wellness in the body. And so we're looking at organic gardens, what's the possibility of them. One of the things that's kind of interesting, New York City just opened up the opportunity to now have rooftop gardens that are actually growing food. It was restricted prior to this summer. Restricted to shrubs and small trees and so forth. But now people are actually able to grow organic food on their rooftops. So it is really taking off here in Manhattan and, of course, the outer boroughs. We've got tonight several what I would call gardeners extraordinaire. We've got Cynthia and Ia from the Urban Gardeners, and then we have Sheila, who is a master gardener. And so we're going to engage some conversation. I have my own garden in Queens, New York. I have a little spot in the backyard that I like to provide my produce for the summer with my family. So I think it's an engagement that we, as people of black African descent, can look towards really eating more healthy and knowing what it is that we are eating and what the love and the care that goes into growing your own food. So with that, let me start out with the first question that I've just put together. And ladies, and I'll let you pick the order. Why are gardens becoming so popular?
Well, this is Cindy.
This is Cindy Stewart in Chicago, and I think I'll pick that one. It's an easy one. I think gardens are becoming popular for a number of reasons. One of them, we have had experienced some very tough economic times, and of course that puts a strain on people's budgets, their household budgets, and that includes food. And we happen to be in a period of time where we've seen our food costs in the past year increase over 30%. And across the globe, we're also seeing food shortages, and in some places it's catastrophic. So what we're seeing is the health and safety of our food source, the declining crops, the monolithic crops. We're seeing all of these things happening, and people are starting to realize that they have to take control of their food source for their health, for their economic freedom, and for their own personal independence. To be able to control your food is the difference between being a slave or being free.
Wow. Okay. So you said a lot in that response. One of the things that people may or may not understand or know about is that there are genetic engineering going on with the seeds. So even if you're growing your own garden, it's important that you know the source of the. Even the seeds. One of the things I saw this year, which I kind of surprised me, was one of the groups here in New York was actually advertising providing organic seeds to actually grow your food, which was like, oh, yeah, if you use the seeds. Like one of the things that I did this year was I had a butternut squash. And, you know, so in cleaning out the seeds of that and the pumpkin, I just dried them and put them out in the garden. But I didn't even think about the whole, you know, engineering that's going on with the food supply and that, you know, that we need to be cautious about. Yeah, go ahead.
And if I may speak to that, this is Ia from Chicago as well. And one of the things that we don't think about because we haven't had to is when you get into or when you allow some of these companies to genetically engineer your food, they take away the food's ability to reproduce itself. So at the end of the season, when we would normally harvest the actual fruit or vegetable and the seeds to save, to dry and save for subsequent years, we lose the ability to do that because the seeds don't reproduce with the genetically engineered food. And, you know, at the end of the season, then we're caught in this never-ending cycle of having to go back to that particular source in order to get seeds for the following seasons. So that's another thing in purchasing heirloom seeds and some of the other organic seeds specifically that we can eliminate, at least in our communities. And that's just a matter of knowledge and education. Because like you said, that's just something that we haven't thought about because we haven't really had to.
Now, you know, all of us, you know, clearly are concerned about the food supply and the source. Why do you think that Americans aren't outraged about the scientifically engineered products? Because I know Europe banned it, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, quite a few years ago. And what they required is that be notified if there are going to be any changes to the product. For
yeah,
example,
we have to keep in mind that we live in this capitalist society that basically puts the number one, the highest value, the highest priority on the ability to make money and to control the financial resources. And here in the United States, for the most part, we are so accustomed to our freedoms that we have become in some ways lazy or at least complacent. We don't want to take on the personal responsibility of being involved. It's easy to go to the grocery store and just hand over some money and get the food and buy the cheapest that's there.
In addition
to that,
there's a generation that has been raised on finger food.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Chicken nuggets, anything that they can hold with their hands as opposed to using a knife and fork. So they're actually not as aware of real food or fresh food or unprocessed foods as past generations. But one of the things that has been instrumental is the fact that we have a lot more farmers markets. I'm in the Midwest area, so we have a lot of farmers markets where local farmers in the Chicagoland area, which includes parts of Indiana, bring their fresh food straight from their gardens into the cities. Even in the Loop area, in the downtown area, there are farmers markets available. And so people are so excited when that season approaches, and they're practically standing in lines because they know that the food is local and it hasn't been, the apples have not been gassed red and transported across the United States to get here and et cetera. So one of the things is that we have to educate a lot more and not just rely on Michelle Obama's working on the changing the pyramid, food pyramid, leaving it to the schools. We have to start at the dinner table.
Yeah, all of you have said a lot of great things. Two points I want to come back to, and then I'll get to my next question. But one is how do we educate the children around good food? And then the second question is, yes, you're absolutely right. The farmers markets have been a big explosion. And in the last 20 years, New York City, for example, you've got all of these farmers markets in Manhattan, and you've got them in the outer boroughs where people are demanding fresh or organic or at least grown in the smaller markets and not being gassed and shipped. So it's more of a regional market that they're actually providing. So, certainly the produce is a little bit better. But how do we get to these young people? Do you guys have any programs that you're working on to educate or to have young people grow their own, start growing their own plants and such in school?
I think that's the key right there. Is children are naturally curious. They're learners. They are sponges for things that they can do, be active, involved in. So anytime we have programs that have give children an opportunity to grow, to learn about fresh food from a growing perspective, they get a chance to play in the dirt. They get a chance to engage with the actual plants and watch them transform into fruits or vegetables. And by nature, then, they also are going to taste those things that they help grow. So getting them involved with the whole process from the beginning of growing is a natural way to get kids to eat more fruits and vegetables if they are involved with the production of them.
This is Sheila. Right. I have a friend that is teaching teens how to prepare meals when they get home from school and there's no one there to fix anything or no one desires to. She's teaching them at a recreational center. They have a very small garden in the rear of the building, outside the building,
and well, they grow tomatoes and such, and then they're introduced at different times new food items that they're not familiar with, because they're not flaming red hots or whatever it is that they eat. And some of them are really, really excited about trying something different. And then there's others that say, they look at it and say, it doesn't look good, I don't want it. But actually, once they have planted it and harvested it and prepared it for the meal, have a whole different outlook on foods.
But yeah,
one of the things that we have to really do is to work with families. I think with the kids, they can introduce some things. But there's grandparents out there that have knowledge about certain things, and they need to really get actively involved too. A few years ago, I learned about, I was involved with some foods that were packaged, but they were not processed. And the interesting thing was that they gave signatures to the food and talked about nature's sign language, and how the shapes and forms and colors of the food complement parts of our body, such as the walnut looks just like our brain, and the walnut is good for the brain. The banana has a curve like your muscle, and it's actually very good for not only for you to eat, but roses really are need potassium, and you can put the peelings of the banana around the rose bushes so they can get potassium too. So there's a lot of interesting things. Broccoli, for instance, has all these, it looks like a little tree, and all of those little parts, those tubular parts, are just like the bronchial tubes in our lungs and a lot of other tubing that we have in our body. And it's actually good for those parts of the body.
Wow. Wow, that's excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We've got one caller with a hand up. We're going to get to you in a second. We come to you live 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And tonight we've got a great topic, urban gardens, organic gardens, you know, what can you do, how you can grow them. We're also looking at just having some engagement, some conversation on what and the value of the gardens and why they're becoming so popular. I wanted to shift the conversation there's so many great topics around this whole conversation of our food supply. And one of the things that, we're just talking about children and how do you introduce children to the conversation. And one of the things that, I don't know, but you ladies can respond to this, juicing has been a big thing. And one of the, I forget the gentleman, the fitness guy that just passed away. Was it Jack LaLanne?
Yeah.
He was big on juicing. And one of the things that they said in a couple of his infomercials were that children, like teachers, were taking this on in class, and they found that children love fresh carrot juice and the combination of carrot and beet juice. Some of the other things that I was kind of surprised to find out that children actually would be interested in it and enjoy it and look forward to it. You like to comment?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. I'm not a nutritionist. I think that we have to be cautious and optimistic at the same time. Optimistic in that it's an improvement when we can get children to drink fresh fruits and vegetable juices. I think over the sugary sweet Kool-Aids and Sunny Delights and all of those kinds of things. I also recognize, though, that we must be cautious at the same time, because there is a reason that the system is really designed for us to have whole foods versus just the juice. And so one of the problems that we are facing in the country has to do with juvenile diabetes and adult onset diabetes in children. And when you juice, you actually remove all of the fiber content, and then you just have, you know, the liquid calories, which take a big jolt to the body's sugar levels. So we just want to be a little cautious about the juicing thing and
keep it
in its place. It's not a panacea for the whole subject of getting kids to eat healthier.
Very good, very good. So the fiber, so in other words, the fiber is one of the key pieces of eating the whole fruit or vegetable, and that's part of what.
Yeah, it slows down the body's metabolism for one thing, and so it takes in that fruit and vegetable at a slower rate than if you just drink it. You know, if you think about it, when someone is having a low blood sugar attack, they give them orange juice. They don't give them an orange, they give them orange juice, because it gives an immediate spike in the sugar level. It goes directly to the blood. So that's the same concept. We just want to be aware of that we don't want to just rely on juicing. It's great as a supplemental, but it's not something that you want to see your kid necessarily drinking 3, 4, 5, 8 ounce glasses of juice a day. That might be a bit much.
Excellent. Okay, so obviously the key is moderation.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. We're going to go to we've got a caller, 347-841. Do you have a question for one of our gardeners?
No, I don't have a question. This is Ray. Good evening, Glenn, Shikasia, if you're on there, or Henrietta, Joe, Jay, if you're on there. No, my thing is just that when you were talking about the youth being involved in their health and whatnot, I believe that juicing is a major part. And, Glenn, to go more to your point, whereas you see kids drinking a lot more carrot juice or beet juice, the reason why is because there's vitamin A involved in there, which comes from apples, which are sweet. That gives that sugary taste to it. Cranberries, which are sweet, that gives that sugary taste to it. So this is why you see the increases. See, nobody's not going to say this, but we already know what it's about. So because we know what that's about, then it's up to us to create and our youth to give health classes, you know, in home economics, add to the development of not the pastries that are made from not organics, but just other substances that are not really good for our bodies or theirs. And it would give them a chance to actually create their own kind of recipes in home economics. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I actually one of the things that I think is important that you said is to educate them and to keep educating them around what's healthy and making healthy choices. We're going to continue the show. We'll get back to you, Ray, in a second. One of the next questions I want to ask, what are the biggest challenges for urban gardeners and for organic gardeners? What would you ladies say are the biggest challenges?
I think one of the biggest challenges that we face is just getting people's attention and to recognize the value that these efforts can have in their life in a very holistic way, their health, their budget, bringing family members and neighbors, community together. So if there are a variety of benefits to the urban garden movement and what we're trying to accomplish and do. But getting people's attention, it's not glitzy. Unfortunately, in our community, a lot of people still have a stigma about any type of work that involves growing. They think about it in a historical sense of when we were forced to be in the fields. versus understanding that it's been a part of every civilization and every culture for the family to have a place to grow their own food. And so it's something that we've given up on. And it's important for us to just go back to understanding the importance of controlling our food source. We looked at something that happened in this week's news. There was a major recall of something simple, cantaloupes. But if you looked at all of the states and all of the people who had been made sick and the people who had died as a result of this one outbreak, it makes you understand that when you don't know where your food is coming from and it's being shipped all over the country, shipped all over the globe, one small thing in one area can have a monumental impact. So it helps us if we can start to educate people to understand those risks and understand how they can do simple things. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be take a lot of time. There are ways that we can now use our small spaces, our technology, our indoor spaces to do this growing. We just have to do the education piece.
That's great. You know, there's a couple of themes that I keep hearing. And so one is getting the family involved, the oldest to the youngest. You know, one of the things around the International Black Summit is about working together as a unit, working together as a group, and certainly rebuilding the family, the organic garden could be that for the family. So I really like that approach and that and when you look at extended families as well, you're also talking about community gardens that people are coming together from different family groups to work together, to work the field, and to produce crop and share information, you know, share information of how to grow things, how to reduce some of the economic impact of the prices of food, and really being able to know what it is that we're eating and be confident that we've got some healthy food sources. So, I can see what you're saying. Now, that's great. What do you recommend, what kinds of food, vegetables do you recommend for first-time growers versus medium versus advanced growers? Do you guys kind of recommend some kind of? Yes.
This is Sheila. We've got some nice weather right now in the Midwest, and it's a great time to plant some root and greens and herbs right about now and have a really fast harvest. Collard greens love this cool weather. Turnips, spinach, parsley, chives, radishes, kale, all those things right now. You can have a second harvest or initial harvest from August until about October, and it's a great time to experiment with just a few little things to see what happens. And when the spring comes, you'll be all gone whole and ready to start that salad in your yard.
Well, interesting. You mentioned collard greens, and that's one of the things that actually, in as harsh as the weather we have in New York, collard greens stay there all winter. I mean, I've gone out and picked it in the snow, and then of course in the spring, they're already rooted and they're already, you know. So as soon as the spring comes, they're already bearing. So they bear from year to year. They're very hardy. Are there any other things that actually would survive the winter that you could recommend that people will grow?
Well, keep in mind that you can grow some things inside during the winter, and you know, so we're seeing people do things like use the window gardens and grow boxes to have all year-round gardens that they have in some sunny spot, or maybe it's an enclosed back porch, or maybe they're supplementing it with a grow light. But so you have,
okay,
you know, herbs in the kitchen on the kitchen counter. If you have sufficient light coming into the kitchen. So keep in mind that we have the ability to keep some things growing outside, but we also have the ability to grow some things inside. And I'm a firm believer in that you should maybe think about trying to grow the things that you like to eat, or you think you'd like to eat.
This is Chef again, especially I agree. Holiday seasons are coming up, and spices and herbs are very expensive in the stores, and of course they're going to go up. It's closer to the holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving, et cetera, and even Halloween, because the pies and, you know, the pumpkin pie spices, allspice, all those different things are really staples. And so if you could just save a little bit of money by growing some of your own herbs for your holiday cooking, it would be very beneficial to your family.
You know, that being said, just yesterday, I put some sage and some basil and some oregano from the garden in with a couple other spices and some garlic from the garden into a salmon. Put it wrapped in the grill, and oh my goodness, I couldn't believe the flavors. And I tell people, there's nothing like having fresh herbs in your food. You know, the stuff that we get in the, you know, the shake bottles are nice, but it's not compared to the fresh stuff you can pick and put it in your food. And I don't know. To me, this is not even in the same category. But people don't get excited as I am about cooking with fresh herbs. So I hear you. I absolutely agree with that one. I'm actually trying stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is Ia. You know, and it is one of the best feelings to prepare something in your kitchen and be able to walk either out your back door or to an area in the house that you're actually growing your food and take it from the vine directly to your table with, you know, with no transportation costs and with relatively low overhead costs when you think about it. So, you know, that's a wonderful feeling, and I think the more we have this conversation and subsequent conversations, I think we will begin to make that connection in our communities. And I think that that's very important as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing. Oh, I was just going to say, there's absolutely nothing better than when I take that first tomato off of the vine in the summertime. I wait all spring for that opportunity to get that first red tomato. For me also to get that green tomato so we can do the fried green tomato, to pick that salad and bring in a variety of different greens and make a fresh salad. That is absolutely the greatest joy and pleasure, I think, in all of this.
It really is, because there's, you can tell an organic or homegrown tomato versus the ones that you buy in the supermarket. There's no difference. I mean, they're much more meaty, they've got more flavor, and they just taste great. And so, you know, now that I'm smart enough to know the difference, when I'm out, I can tell if it's a good tomato or if it's just a regular tomato that they get in the supermarket that they're using at the particular restaurant. So you get your palate get smarter and more sensitized to organic or at least fresh grown and regionally grown or locally grown supplies.
There's a difference
with the tomatoes. This is a great time to create some new recipes. If you've got an excess of tomatoes, abundance of red or green, to make fried green tomatoes, which a lot of people have done and heard about, and there's always something new. One of my friends makes her mother makes a green tomato pie, and it looks and tastes like apple pie. Looks like apple pie. But it's green tomato. My mother always made a red tomato dish that was something like a cobbler. Very, very sweet. If you don't like sweet, it wouldn't be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
But we have our friend, the Internet. And
well, you know, that's
a wonderful thing.
You're absolutely right. That is a great tool, because if you grow things and you want to find out how to use them, there are lots and lots of recipes that are available on the Internet. So you're right. You're certainly, especially if you've got something fresh, you want to really utilize it and try some new things with it as well.
You know, you just made me think about something, because I remember as a kid, my grandmother used to make something called a tomato soup cake. And, you know, I always thought about it as something that you would have to make using a can of Campbell's tomato soup. But you just got me to thinking in terms of how you could make your own soup and make that tomato soup cake, and I bet you it would be three times better.
Yeah.
Oh,
with wild
sausage.
Yes.
And sausage you can freeze for pastas and all types of meatloaf and other things that you're going to have in the winter, stews. So that's a good thing.
Yes.
Well, you know, my aunt does this thing where she'll grow some onions and some oregano and some thyme, some small leaf thyme. Actually, she has some big leaf thyme as well. And she puts all of those herbs together and does it with the mortar and just crushes them and then puts it into a bottle. And then, so she supplies out her own seasoning to her different meats and different things, different recipes, and she makes like a paste with it, and uses that throughout the year.
Hmm.
So
cool.
Interesting. Yeah, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We're here live every Sunday. We've got a couple callers with their hands up. One looks like Shakesha. 310-346. Hey, Shakesha, welcome to the show. I saw
Thank
Jerry
you.
A little later, but I don't see where he's at now. Okay, go ahead. Oh, how are you?
Yes, I'm doing great, calling in from Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
I'm fun girl.
Okay.
All right, we got a little background noise. You're still on the air.
Yes.
Yes.
Soon to go to Arizona. But wanted to say I'm loving the show. Also wanted to do a shout out. There are several people who are listening in that I asked to listen in. So I want to shout out to Stephanie, to Helen, Helen in Memphis, Stephanie in California, Karen's father in Cincinnati, and Keita in Atlanta, Georgia. So you got people listening all across the United States and probably the world to you guys talk about this delicious food. I want to go eat something.
Okay. All right, Jakaysha. Thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on mute, and let me go to Jerry. Jerry, where are you? You're right over here. Jerry, welcome to the
peace,
show.
Brothers. How you doing? How you feel?
I'm good. I'm good. How you doing? Good. Do you have a Kwanzaa principle for us tonight?
Yeah. I got a Kwanzaa principle that fits the show tonight.
Jerry supplies us with a principle so that we are reminded of Kwanzaa and the whole conversation of unity and empowerment of our community all year around, so we don't have to wait for the days of Kwanzaa to be powered by the principles of Kwanzaa. So go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, the Kwanzaa principle for the show tonight is Kuumba, in parentheses, means creativity. It means to do away as much as we can in the way we can in order to leave our communities more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited.
Excellent. Well, you know, that ties in perfectly with the conversation tonight, because we're looking to create our bodies being better shape than they are, our mind to think better with the great food that we're supplying it with, and we're looking to lead, you know, by growing, we're now adding to the air space and cleaning up the air and taking some of the carbon monoxide out and recreating some oxygen. So we're actually creating a better space for our environment moving forward. So all of those things absolutely impact the conversation that we're having tonight. Very good. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Great.
Well, we've got we're quickly coming down to the end. We've got about 17 minutes left, and I wanted to cover one more thing before we move on, and that is gardeners always run into insects that are either bugs, aphids, snails, or slugs that are eating our gardens, and then, of course, mildew and fungi. So let's start out with the bugs. What do you ladies recommend to impact outdoor gardens? And sometimes you can have it in indoor gardens as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Ia. One of the things that I have found to be effective, especially on some of my green leafy vegetables that are in the outdoor garden, is a cayenne pepper spray. And it really is exactly what it sounds, you know, just some water, a little white vinegar, and some cayenne pepper. And that seems to ward off most of the little mealy bugs and some of the larger insects, but that's been effective for me here in Chicago over the past few years.
I agree. That was my first thought, is the cayenne pepper. But one thing that's very interesting, I don't know if either of you in Chicago have noticed, there are a lot of praying mantis now that I haven't seen in past years. Growing up, I didn't see as many. It was very unusual to see. But now I think there's a lot more praying mantis around, and evidently there's food for them here. So they're taking care of a lot of the insects. You can purchase praying mantis for your outside garden, and you can also purchase ladybugs. Be very careful about what you might think is a ladybug. The brown and brown speckled are not ladybugs. They're potato bugs, and they have other names. But they bite, and they are not beneficial for the garden. But the red ladybugs with the black spots, those you can purchase for your gardens also for an insect control.
Very, very good. I've noticed a bunch of praying mantises in my garden as well over the last three or four years. I actually saw at one time about 5 praying mantises in my garden. Young praying mantises early, maybe in June time frame, June, July. It probably was July. So I was pretty surprised because there was a point in time when I would never see a praying mantis, and they've, as you said, they've come back, and so that's a good thing. Excellent. Now, and I also heard that marigolds are very good at bug deflectors. So if you plant marigolds in intermittently in your garden, something about the smell of them that wards off squirrels and some of the insects. Oh,
that is correct. And rabbits. Rabbits also.
And rabbits as well? Okay.
But basically make borders with the marigolds. And you can harvest those now. They're going to seed. You can collect those and plant them next year, especially the ones that have done very well for you. Collect the seeds, put them in a little sawdust or some peat, if you have some peat left over from the spring. Or you can just purchase a small bag of peat and store them in a cool place like your garage or your basement area where it's cool and dry. And you can use those for next year and make your borders. The little creatures don't necessarily like those. There are some that don't have a fragrance, and you want to make sure that they're not that many varieties, but there are some that don't have a fragrance, and you want to stay away from those.
So you want the ones with the fragrance. Okay, good. Okay, very good. Very good. We've got another caller. And then I want to go to the mildew and the fungi. Caller 770912, you're live on the air. You have some questions for our gardeners? You're live on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay. Hey, Glenn, it's Sharon from Atlanta.
Hey, Sharon, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you. My question is, I have a very small space, and what can I do? So, like you were saying, the herb gardens and things, but what are some of the key tools to get started?
Well, there's something called an earth box that you can get at your local garden store, and it's basically it's a kit. So if you're new to gardening, it's one of those kind of almost foolproof kits. It gives you everything in one box that you can set up for an indoor garden. And depending on your light in your space, where you're going to place it would depend on whether or not if you have a really good south-facing window to get good light, that's great. If not, you may have to supplement it with some type of additional plant grow light. But even they have come down in size and cost, and you can do everything down to a CFL type of grow light there as well. There also, if you look on the internet, you'll find window gardens, which are basically little vertical. Some of them can be bought as a kit. Some just give you instructions on how to make it. Many of them are made with recycled water bottles, and they're think of it in terms they're strung together by a chain, and you can have as many of them as your window would hold, and you can string them up and cut a hole in it and actually grow your plant inside this water bottle using a system to hydroponically water systems, water and nutrients to feed them. So there are a lot of different things that you can do in very small spaces, and I would definitely suggest that you just pile around on the internet a little bit, you'll find a lot of ideas.
Thank you.
And also at the different stores now. The nurseries are beginning to thin out. They're going to be closing for the winter. So you can get some bargains on a lot of things. So check out your Walmart, your Kmart, those types of stores that have temporary garden centers, and you will probably get some great bargains on things, even the herbs. And don't be afraid if it looks a little scrawny. The root is what's most important. And if you want to, if you see something for 50 cents or a dollar, grab them and just trim off the little parts that look dead or brown. You've got a strong, if you've got a strong root, it'll all come back. No, it's nothing to be afraid of or anxious.
Cool. Very good. Excellent. Now, mildew and fungi, what can we do organically? We've got about 6 minutes before the show is over. That one I haven't figured out how to get around it using organic means.
Well, I don't know a whole lot of it. I certainly am not going to claim to be an expert. I think one of the things, because it is sort of think about it as a contagious disease, it sort of spreads, making sure that the plants aren't too close together or giving them enough space so that there's some proper air circulation is a part of it. Doing that thinning and making sure that we're doing that kind of thing is one of the things. There are some organic fungicides that are introduced out on the market for fruit trees and flowers. And in some ways, depending on the compost itself, using it as a compost tea has been recommended as a way to help control that. But you're right, it's a problem.
I would say that
the
tea also, the compost tea. And if you do have your own compost, be cautious of what you're putting in the compost. A lot of places recommend grass clippings, and they recommend leaves. But I really steer away from that, because if your leaves have some type of disease on them, or the grass has something in it that is not desirable, you're going to infiltrate your compost with it, and I just really prefer not to use those. So whatever type of mulch you're using, make sure that it's good quality, for one. And like she said, keep everything aerated, so it's getting enough air. And when you do remove the leaves or remove the branches, make sure you dispose of them properly. You don't want to contaminate something else. If you're cutting, make sure that you clean your cutting tool before you attempt another plant, because you don't want to transfer anything.
Oh, okay. So just like you being sterile, you wouldn't want to pass something to something else, so you clean it thoroughly. And what do you use to clean it? You get any, like, extra strength kind of stuff, alcohol or anything, or just rinsing it off? Water is sufficient?
I would use alcohol.
Yeah, and another, you can use hydrogen peroxide. Just by spraying the hydrogen peroxide on the plants will help with mildew removal as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Just your everyday garden variety hydrogen peroxide that we all keep in our medicine cabinets at one point or another.
Excellent. So, we're wrapping up the show. Thank you, ladies, for some great conversation. I really appreciate and thank you for the insights that you've had, because you're really giving us some ideas around getting started and maintenance of the garden. And, and when you look at it and think about it, again, these are the same things that we want to do for ourselves spiritually. You know, we want to keep it aerated, keep it clean. If there's anything that is of no use to us, you want to cut it and get rid of it, move it out, clear it out of your space, clear it out of your spiritual space. We're going to be continuing this conversation next week, and we're going to talk a little bit about harvesting tips, and probably, well, one of the questions I have is, how do you prepare your garden for the winter? And so those are the things that we'll look to continue this conversation. Ladies, anything that you'd like to say before we close out?
Just have fun. Go out there and try your hand, grow some things, eat some things, try something different and new, and share it with other people.
Okay. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I would also suggest, especially for newbie gardeners that are kind of in the exploratory stages of what they may want to do or what they think they can handle. You know, there's plenty of information on the internet, just about any and every type of gardening technique, indoor and outdoor, is out there for research purposes. So, you know, you may find a niche that is not necessarily that popular, but it's something that fits with your lifestyle that will also encourage you to keep doing it.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Jerry, you want to give us the oxygen room number?
That number is 218-862-6420. The access number is 797-4834#. And that oxygen will be following right after the show from 9 o'clock to 9:30. So please join. Back at you.
Great, great, great. Thank you so much. So we've had a very, for me, a very invigorating show tonight. We're talking about the purpose of the popularity and the purpose of the gardens, how the gardens can really provide us economic benefit, take care of our bodies, and nourish and enrich us physically and mentally and spiritually. And one of the things we haven't talked about so much is the whole conversation of quiet time in the garden. You know, we haven't talked about the quiet time and the spiritual time in
relationship or a situation where I had to divorce him. I felt it was kind of sweet.
You know, there are times when we just go out in the garden and we just enjoy the garden. It's relaxing. It's like a form of meditation, and it's to get your fingers in the dirt and realize that you've got some products, some produce that you have at the end of your toiling and the weeding, and that you're nutritiously supporting the body. So for me, this is a conversation I love. This is a great conversation for me. I enjoy it. I look forward to continuing this conversation next week when we're going to talk about harvesting and preparing your garden, your spiritual and your physical garden for the winter. Jerry, you want to give us the oxygen room one more time? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Jerry has already left. And we're actually off the air. So good night. We love you. Thank you for being with us. Continue to come to our conversation, 646-716-9827, next week. Thank you and good night.
Good night, everybody.